Now on Sky Sports Radio, it's time to chinwag with Cozzy.
27 to 11. Been looking forward to having a chinwag with Chris Lees. He's been a busy man, though. Morning, Chris. How are you?
Yeah, well, thanks, Sean.
That's good. You were just looking at the results here, you know, the 9th of April. By gee, you got RSI that day getting winners. You had the Invitations and Admiral Jello at Newcastle. Then you gang-tackled the provincial championships and got the money with Danish Twist. And then the Group 1 Queen Elizabeth with Lucia Valentina. That's got to be your best day ever, wouldn't it?
Yeah, certainly. It was a day to remember for the stable. And, you know, it's a long process and a lot of work goes into setting horses for certain days. But certainly rewarding day for everyone involved.
Well, I think you just highlighted them. You said setting horses for certain days. Well, look at Lucia Valentina, first of all. Basically, she was second up, but a gap between the runs. But you obviously just knew what was required for that day.
Oh, well, she's a highly talented mare. You know, when things go right for her, she's a back marker. So them type of horses need a few favours. And she just need the right type of tempo. And she just got everything seemed to go right on the day for her. So, you know, they're rare days, as I said, but certainly a good day.
Did you give instructions on that day to Damien Oliver or not, or just say you know how to ride her?
Well, he'd ridden her a couple of times. He rode two over the last three runs, and she's pretty one-dimensional, unfortunately. She hasn't got any of that early toe to put herself into the race, so I didn't think she'd be as far back as she was, but neither did Damien. But she was a touch slow away, and she looked like there for a couple of strides. She wasn't even going to put herself into the race, but she was able to pick up during the run, and then she found a bit of trouble on the corner. But once she overcome that, she's got that electrifying 200 metre sprint. When there's just enough pressure in the race that the leaders come back to her.
Now the provincial championship again. Talking about setting horses for one day, you almost need the 9-horse float just to transport your horses in the one race there.
Yeah. Look, it's a process where, you know, to qualify your horses. It's a great opportunity for the country one. I think is tremendous, and the provincial ones it's good as well. But we were able to get a few horses through the heats, and you know, a couple of them there aimed up on the day.
Can I ask you which one of all of them you thought was the best on the day?
It's easy to say now, but I really did think the winner was the one who, when she had a nice gait and her lead-up runs appeared to be going the right way. I thought she was possibly our best chance, but with no great confidence.
Now, I must ask, as a trainer going to the mounting yard before a race like that, when you've got 9 horses there and 9 sets of owners, they're probably all looking at each other and thinking, hang on, we're all on one side, but we're all against each other here. How do you placate them all?
Each man to their own out there. But, I had a lot of staff down there on the day, and I tried to get through to each individual owner the best I could. Obviously, a lot of them were owned by big syndicates. But I think these days, you know, I was able to make contact with them the day before through a voice message and what I thought of the race and what I thought their chances were. So I think everyone was pretty satisfied, and it's probably a unique situation for our stable under them circumstances. I think everyone was pretty happy just to be involved in the race, so getting through the heats. And as I said, it's a unique thing for the gallops. It's more where you have heats and a final, bit more like a greyhound or harness racing thing. Yeah. I think it was really well received, and I think it's great concept and something they probably might look to doing more regularly.
It's interesting when you say a voice message to owners that it's technology is something you really everyone's had to embrace, haven't they?
Yeah, you have to, or you get left behind, and something that we're working on constantly trying to keep up with other stables. You know, there's some that are really at the forefront of these things, and you know, I think owners expect it. You know, if they have horses in other places that do things, you need to keep up with them people.
Now, your dad, Max, famous man, trainer, he started off in Morford, around about there in the Hunter Valley, and rode track work, he rode in races, the whole lot. What's your earliest memories of your dad?
Yeah, well, he was still a jockey when I was born, though I don't remember that. He had a bad fall not long after I was born, so I can only ever remember him being a trainer, and obviously he would have started out with a very small stable. My memory starts just after Lusk or around Lusk and Star. So it was when he was probably starting to multiply his numbers and was quite successful. So I've had you know, that's most of my recollection is Dad's always been quite a successful horse trainer.
How old would you have been, Chris, when Luskin Star sort of arrived?
I was six.
Six. What was it like at the time going to school? But when most of the kids, in, like the local kids involved, were interested in the racing. And when you know, when a local kid's dad gets a good horse, it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, yeah. Look, I can't really remember Luskin Star that well, but I obviously different to kids today. Don't really. A lot of our mates, you know, we often went to the Broadmeadow one Saturday or Beaumont Park Dogs the other Saturday, and that's what you done on Saturday afternoon. So it was probably a special time, you know, to have your father with a big string of horses and when you're a young fella, just having a bit of a punt or whatever, watching it following the races. So, yeah, it was a different time.
Did you find any of the teachers at schools who were absolute desperates and would be tugging your coat for a tip?
More so in high school. I had a couple, a couple that I still see around floating around the tabs today.
You'd all of a sudden become the most popular student if you could find a winner for him.
Yeah, less chance of getting the cane.
Now, your dad, Max, when, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think was diagnosed with cancer, and that must have poleaxed the family, but 13 days later he passed away.
Yeah, it was very sudden. In hindsight, you know, it was probably went undetected, bowel cancer originally, and it had progressed to his liver, being a bit stubborn, I suppose. It wasn't diagnosed through probably in some ways his own fault. So that's something for everyone to take notice of. But, it was very sudden. And, as you just said, alluded to, he passed away 13 days later. So it was a time when I couldn't really dwell on things too much. It was we had a big stable for me to try and take control of.
That must have been a pretty horrendous time.
Yeah, it was when you think back. You know, everything happened so quick, but I was very fortunate that I had good people around me and good family support. My wife and, of course, my mum, and we had to support mum through that time. As I said, I had good staff around me, and I suppose in some ways I'd like to think nothing changed too much.
Now, when you look at omens, and people look at omens and symbols and whatever in racing, now I think your dad's last winner was a horse that he'd obviously nominated. It went around. I don't believe you were at the races that day. I think you were having a couple of beers with a few mates, but the name of the horse was something that probably would have hit you like a sledgehammer.
Yeah, Carry On Mate. It probably didn't till maybe even the next day. I think Jeff Wilson picked up on it straight away. No longer with us, but he's a Newcastle Herald racing rider, and he rang me straight after the race. And it probably didn't really dawn on me. I probably thought for elsewhere. But, that was special. As he was Dad's last runner the day after he passed away. Alan Robinson rode it for him, who has done a lot of riding for Dad over the years. So, yeah, it was special. You know, if you're into them type of things, I suppose it has some significance.
Chris, when you're working with your dad there, when you look back, what's, I suppose, the couple of points that you took from him that, you know, that you think, gee, I'm glad I learnt that from him?
Like a lot of them trainers, Sean, I don't know that they say too much. That wasn't once a big word. So it's just a matter of watching, observing, and I think in this game, just repetition, if you continue to do the right things, you know, they become second nature, I'd like to think. But, he had terrific patience. You know, I think he was... he fed his horses very well. He's very particular. He was always he's always prepared to learn. I think that's one thing I picked up on. He always wanted to know what Bart was doing or TJ Smith was doing back in them times. And, you know, I think you've got to continue to evolve and learn from other people, because this game, it's a game where you're never always right, and you just got to continue to source new ideas and things from that, and Dad was always he wasn't stuck in his ways. He was very prepared to hear of other methods.
Back in that era, a lot of people were stuck in their ways, so they just had, that's my formula and I stick to it.
Yeah, you're probably right, but I think, you know, as you said, on with technology and the world's getting smaller and different things. I know myself, even just going to Hong Kong recently and watching some of the top trainers from various parts of the world, how everyone does everything a little bit different, all with the same, everyone's trying to get the same result, just trying to get a horse to run as fast as they can from A to B. But there are many ways to skin a cat, as they say. So if you can continue to pick up on little things, you know, certain things
suit different horses.
Was your dad a man who worked horses hard, or did he give them sort of more long striding work and then top them off with a few gallops?
I wouldn't say he was too hard. I think back in a certain era when different, you know, when therapeutic drugs or whatever used, you know, obviously he trained harder then, though. And but he was able to evolve and change his methods and probably not work them as hard in later days, and with a different style of horse that coming through, not your tougher colonial horse. I feel he changed his methods in some ways. Mm. But I wouldn't say, I'd say he was more a kinder trainer. Mm.
Now, for yourself taking over from your dad, how big a battle was it for you to maintain things? Because obviously people would say, all right, well, Max was training these horses, now Chris has taken over. Did the numbers stay there, or did you find you had to work just as hard to maintain numbers?
Well, I think I had to work hard to maintain numbers. I think we were fortunate some horses were going okay at the time. And, and I think having been my father's right-hand man, I suppose, for 15 or 16 years or so, I had a pretty good relationship with the majority of owners, and I went to the races on a regular car. So it wasn't, I don't think for the owners it would have been a huge, huge change. And but that said, you know, a young trainer, I was very, in some ways, you know, lost my father, but I was very fortunate to be left a big stable. And I take my hat off to the young fellas who start off today with very small numbers. It's a really tough game. So I was fortunate from that perspective, but also it was pretty important to get some results early. Otherwise, I'm sure, you know, that it's very easy to move your horse to someone else. Mm.
In those early days, after taking over, is there one horse you look and think, gee, I'd give you a pat every day? You were the one that just sort of kept the flag flying or kept you there?
Yeah, definitely County Tyrone, you know, yeah. I no doubt. He was able to, even if he didn't win, he was able to go to all the carnivals and race at a high level for, well, he was my father's last Group 1 winner at 3, and I retired him after running third in the Newcastle Cup at 10. And he danced every dance in between. I think he ran 6 Sydney Cups. So he was one horse, and I was very fortunate to have.
You don't often get him that tough, do you?
No, you do not. You know, he never had an injury. He never missed a spring or autumn, and had a few winters in between. So he was very rare commodity.
Now, you've had Samantha Miss, another great one. How did she come along?
Yeah, I was very fortunate then again. Ron Crogan, who'd raced a lot of horses with the late John Inglis, and he had a number of horses with us, but he got to a stage where he wanted to buy a more expensive horse, and he was desperate to buy a Redoubt's Choice filly at Easter, and I think it was would have been 2007, and he narrowed it down. We narrowed it down to a group of people to a few horses, and fortunate enough, out of the ones that he narrowed down to, Samantha Miss was the one he purchased for $1.5 million, I think it was at the time. It was a lot of money, and she was one of the few ones who was able to recapture her purchase price on the track.
How did it feel having a horse come into your stables that paid $1.5 million for? Did you ever look at it in the dollar terms, or just look and say, right, I want another horse?
Yeah, look, you try to keep them, treat them all the same and keep them equal, you know. But she certainly was one we kept a close eye on. But and it was pretty apparent early on that she was going to be pretty smart, so it wasn't hard to keep an eye on.
When you first saw, you said she showed you obviously something early, did you look and think this may get to Group 1 level or black type level, or do you think hopefully we've got a good city horse in our hands here?
Well, she was stuck in the stable. She'd only come from the break. She got stuck in our stable during EI, and she wasn't able to leave because of all the lockdown.
Yep.
And we were in a bit of a holding pattern at Newcastle. We didn't have the EI, but we weren't able to move or do anything with the horses. So she spent a fair bit of time here, and in that time, we'd done a little bit of work without knowing that we couldn't go anywhere, and straight away she showed above average ability, and that comes through. And by the time she got to the races in, I think it was late February, early March, but she won her first start at Randwick. And although we were always thinking whatever she'd done as a two-year-old would be a bonus, she always had a tendency that she was going to be better when we got her over further ground the following spring.
Chris, the EI must have been a nightmare.
Oh, it was, you know, everyone had their different stories, but we're very fortunate. I think Racing New South Wales and the government together were well compensated. So from that point of view, it wasn't a total nightmare, but it certainly was very frustrating for everyone involved.
Now, you've had some great syndicates come on board. Joe O'Neill with Prime Thoroughbreds, he's given you a lot of good horses along the way.
Yeah, he's been terrific, Joe. He approached me reasonably early in my career, so I was very fortunate, and he's been a wonderful asset to our stable. He's always got at least a dozen horses in work, and he's terrific to train for, and he's a great avenue for people to get involved in the early stages to get a share in a horse, and he's had some wonderful success.
I nearly fell off the chair here one day, and I think he was at your place. I did a chin wag with him when we found out we were cousins and didn't know it.
Yeah, well, you still look similar, Sean. I don't know how you didn't work that out.
Yeah, righto. Put the boot right. I don't think either of us would be claiming three, put it that way. The Australian bloodstock as well, you've had a lot of success and a lot of horses there too.
Yeah, they've been terrific to train for. They've really took racing by storm in some ways. In a pretty short time, they've got a unique business model where they mainly source tried stock, whether it be Australia or abroad, and then now they're delving into the yearling market, but they've had some wonderful success, and I'm very fortunate to be training for them.
Chin wagging with Chris Lees. Chris, as I mentioned, you've had quite a few of the international horses here, and over the years since the days of Robert Sanks to bringing them out with Colin Hayes and then Lloyd Williams with his, there seems to have been a variety of, I suppose, opinions on how best to prepare them and how they race, whether lightly raced, you know, space their runs, and is there any formula to them or not?
I think everyone's got a theory to them, Sean. I'm sure of that. I've heard most of them. Look, I think it comes down to the individual horse. I've found a lot of them settle in and cope with the Australian, not only the Australian training methods, training tracks, but our racing style and our racing tracks. You know, we do have firmer ground, and they are different circumstances, but you find some handle things better than others, but you do have to try and then adapt to the horse. But I think the ones that really do well in Australia, the ones that adapt more so our way. And, you know, as you rattle off, there's been a lot of examples over a long period of time of with varying degrees of success, but there's no doubt they're a superior stayer. And if they do settle in and do things right, you do have a good horse on your hands.
Do you find it easier if you get one that is only had a couple of runs overseas where it hasn't developed a lot of habits of I suppose, want of a better description, rather than something that's had 10 runs?
Oh, I think so. That's no doubt. That's, you know, I think that's anywhere, you know, a horse. Just a bit like a young kid changing schools. The younger they do it, the easier they adapt. That's no doubt. But, you know, I think if you can get that right horse, and also they're racing at a lower level when they first get here and they're able to then go through their grade, they seem to be the ones that certainly do adapt better, and you get more longevity. No doubt the exposed horse, you can get good results, but whether you can get that longevity out of them is something else.
Now, is there one that's already got you scratching your head or even pulling a bit of hair out to Ruby?
Oh, he has got a few issues. He come with a bit of baggage.
I just wondered whether or not you've been headbutting the wall.
Yeah, oh, look, he's got a lot of issues, that horse. So I think he had a lot of talent in his day. Whether we'll ever see it, it's quite questionable.
Is the problem between his ears or still between his back legs?
Both.
He got the daily double happening.
He has.
I wondered about that because he just looked like on past form he had a truckload of ability.
Yeah, he did. He did, but it's getting a fair way away, that form. So whether we'll ever see it, I doubt.
Which has been the best of them, of the imports you've had? I mean, sometimes they don't produce it in the race, but you look and think, gee, if only this horse would. Which do you reckon has been the best of all the imports you've had?
For me, you know, obviously we didn't see the best of Protectionist, what he's done, but I'd have to say Salon Soldier. I've got no doubt he would have raced at a pretty high level. He only had two starts for the stable. He won an open handicap at Randwick and then went to Flemington on Melbourne Cup Day and won stakes race over 1,800 metres. And I think if he could have come back in the autumn, he could have been a Queen Elizabeth or a Doncaster type of horse.
Magic Artist, that must have broken your heart the other day because he'd shown you a fair bit.
Yeah, disappointing for everyone involved. A freak accident. He just cast for about 5 seconds in his box, and in that period when he kicked the wall and fractured his hip. So very disappointing. Look, he was unlucky in a McKinnon Stakes. He raced well again the following week in the Emirates. So if we could have got him anywhere near that level, he had a good win in him.
Now, in your stable at the moment, for people who like to have a dollar or two each way, which is one they can anchor their wagon to?
Oh, you got me on the hot there, Sean. Look, I thought Danish Twist done a good job last week, and I think she's chance of measuring up to a better race, whether it's at Hawkesbury or a fortnight later at Scone. So that, you know, she's a talented mare. Outside of that, Sean, I'm a little bit light on at the moment.
So a bit of a break. Now, a lot of the horses are racing the provincial championship. Will a lot of those go for a bit of a spell now? Because that was their grand final, probably, wasn't it?
Oh, a couple of them were early in their prep this year as opposed to last year. I had a big number, but they were deeper into their preparation. They've all had a relatively easy week. But Par Race running on Saturday, she didn't have a great deal of luck in that race, so she could turn things around on Saturday.
All right. Well, we wish you luck. It's been great to catch up and have a chinwag with you, Chris. And you got a quiet day today. I think you only had the one runner at Newcastle, and because you knew you were talking to me, you scratched it. We appreciate that. Yeah.
No problem, Sean. My pleasure.
Good on you, Chris. Good to have a chinwag.
Thanks, mate.
There we go. Chris Lees, and great to catch up with him too after a huge day there on the 9th of April at the Carnival.